Hello and welcome to Series 1 of the podcast The Heart of Teaching, produced by Hibernia College. My name is Aoife Lynham, teacher and researcher, and in this podcast I speak with educators from a variety of fields and ask them about the teachers who inspired them to get where they are today. So join us as we meet the inspirational for a little bit of inspiration. Today we are joined in the studio by Anne Lawler and Donna Cutler-Landsman. Anne is one of the founding members of the 22Q11 Ireland support group, and she's worked closely with Donna, who is an expert in the field of 22Q deletion syndrome. Donna has been assisting schools and parents with understanding 22Q deletion syndrome across the United States and abroad for over 20 years. She has presented at conferences worldwide and is the author of several books and articles on the subject. The third edition of her book, Educating Children with Velocardiofacial Syndrome, which is also known as 22Q11.2 deletion syndrome, is due for publication in late 2019. Anne and Donna are here today to raise awareness about 22Q. Okay, welcome here, Anne and Donna. I'm absolutely delighted to have the two of you here today to talk all about 22Q. Anne, you might begin by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about your experience with 22Q.
Thank you, Aoife, and thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here also, and really delighted to have Donna Cutler-Landsman with us. My experience of 22Q in the area of education came to me through my daughter. And my daughter is now 34, but she was 15 years old before she was diagnosed. So we had basically no information. My experience as she was growing up was quite disheartening in a lot of ways. She struggled in school a lot. She had global developmental delay. She had difficulty learning. Math was a huge problem. Comprehension of language, reading, all of that. And she became quite withdrawn and shy in school. She was bullied. So she had learning differences, which were pretty apparent, but nobody quite knew why. So when she was diagnosed, it was a great relief because it explained all of her problems. But at the same time, it left me with a lot of unanswered questions. And at the time in 1998, when she was 15, there was very little support. And of course, no online support or Googling or Facebook groups. So we were quite isolated. I was quite isolated as a parent and she was quite isolated as a child. So we eventually set up the 22Q Ireland support group. And we're looking at all aspects now of the condition, one in particular being education. And one of our aims would be to educate the educators, because there is a particular educational profile to 22Q that is really, it's imperative really that a teacher will know this in the classroom, especially in mainstream. School from the age of 12, as our children go into secondary school, is particularly difficult because it's difficult for any child because we're moving, as you know, Aoife, from the primary cocoon, into this bewildering 7 or 8 teachers, 7 or 8 different subjects, and we're expected to keep up. And these children cannot keep up. And very often their psychological well-being and their mental health suffers because of that. And when we have a child or children who are already genetically predisposed to mental health issues, it can really make the difference between this child growing into adulthood with a good sense of self and knowing their capabilities and also their limitations.
Absolutely, and there's such a central role for education to play in that. And you mentioned there are a lot of unanswered questions, and I suppose that's why we're very fortunate to have Donna Cutler-Landsman here today with us. And thank you so much, Donna. We really appreciate it.
Thrilled to be here.
All the way from Wisconsin.
Yes, all the way from the United States, yes.
So I suppose for many teachers listening, or student teachers, or anyone who's anything relating to education, how would you describe 22Q in the profile of what it may look like in the classroom?
First of all, I think teachers should recognize there's a wide variability in the syndrome. Approximately 30% of the children are more significantly impaired from the get-go. And about 70% have, you know, sort of a low average IQ level. So in early elementary school, they're kind of able to keep up in the mainstream and so on. And they're behind. Basically, subjects like mathematics are extremely difficult, and there's a lot of reasons for that. However, reading decoding is a strength. So they can actually learn to read, many of them, quite a little bit easier, but comprehension is very difficult. Early on in before primary school, for the little ones, there's a speech and language impairment that goes along with the syndrome. Quite a few children with this are born with a submucosal cleft palate and velopharyngeal insufficiency. So speaking is very difficult for them. Many of them have surgeries in order to be able to speak. Early on, they may need occupational therapy or physical therapy. There's hypotonia or low muscle tone. So the children present as needy, but, you know, relatively bright, you know, able to pick up colors and numbers and things like that. So there's a subset that really have a lot of good skills to use. And then there's another subset who have more challenges. So there's two. But this is a very complex syndrome. Underlying this profile are sort of hidden needs. Adaptive skills can be very slow to develop. So even though children have a low average IQ, they don't learn the daily living skills and the independent skills that they need to really morph into the world of work and be able to be self-sufficient adults. It's kind of a hidden piece of this. There's difficulty with executive functioning, being able to plan and organize and act execute a plan and evaluate the plan. So there's a lot of need around just getting their act together. I think a lot of parents say, you know, I'm constantly kind of shepherding my child or reminding them to take their homework back to school or packing their backpack. So there's all that housekeeping kind of thing. Some of the children have ADHD or ADD. Many of them have significant anxiety, which makes them very shy to ask for help. They are not quick to actually try new things, and so they sort of withdraw. Typically they are not behavioral problems. It's more they are the children that are just kind of quiet and are afraid in the classroom to make a mistake or to have other people kind of look at them the wrong way.
That certainly presents a lot of challenges for teachers.
So it's very complex, and you know, as they mature and move through school, typically what happens is the gap widens. With this syndrome, the research is showing that there is a cognitive decline over time, so that we strongly recommend that they're tested multiple times throughout their school years so that you have an accurate reading of their ability level. Because what we find is by the time they get to middle and high school, or in your case, it's post-secondary. Being able to take chemistry and algebra and geometry and calculus is really difficult. And where they looked like they were sort of able to keep up with their peers in the primary school, now this becomes very difficult for them. And I think Anne mentioned as well, there's a very significant mental health component to this syndrome. Approximately 30% of children with this really develop schizophrenia, which is significant mental health issues. So genetically, they're predisposed. What we can do, though, environmentally is to eliminate the stress as much as we can. So we have to program very, very specifically for them to help them feel self-worth, to feel good about themselves, to actually move into the world of work productively, and train them as best we can to be independent and to live a fulfilled life as adults.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm hearing about all the challenges that can present, I suppose.
Yes.
Is it unpredictable what is going to happen?
Absolutely. It is. You have to tailor the program to each individual child. And that's kind of where I do my work in the United States, is I work with families through the 22Q Family Foundation. I can offer this service free of charge to families through that foundation, and the families can contact me. I can go through all their psychological testing, go through their records, and then specifically work with the schools on an individual basis to help the teachers and the staff understand the syndrome and program more effectively for the children, so they're happy and not overly stressed, and hopefully, preventing some of the more significant problems occurring in the long term.
That sounds like a really good kind of a model for schools, a very supportive model for schools and for families. And do we have anything like that in Ireland to support teachers with 22Q?
Okay,
and what do we need? Because, obviously that's a wonderful model. What would your magic wand do if you could do something in Ireland?
My magic wand would do exactly as Donna has described, that the children would have testings along the way to find out whatever their abilities are at a given time. And also, of course, if we could maybe clone Donna and have somebody like her here, which is something I think we could work on, and I think it would work. It would be a marvelous, I think it would be a marvelous thing to happen. I think it would make a significant difference to the children themselves.
Absolutely.
My own personal experiencing watching Anya grow and her struggles and her significant struggles around educational issues, would lead me to believe anyway that this type of support would be hugely beneficial.
Absolutely.
Perhaps one of our most significant difficulties, Donna, is the relative invisibility.
And I'd have to agree with you on that, because I was a teacher and I never came across this at any point. It's nearly 13 years since I'm qualified, and I don't have that. I never had heard of it before I met Anne and before I met Anya. So it's raising that awareness.
And I think a lot of children are not diagnosed. So the syndrome is 1 in 2,000 people. Okay. So it's relatively common. I think what happens is that because there's such a wide variety of problems that can happen, that oftentimes children are not really diagnosed. So most likely you've had children with the syndrome that you've taught, and you might have noticed that they have trouble learning or there's a little bit of difference in them. But what you were really dealing with was this underlying genetic deletion. And what we would love to do is to raise awareness to the staff, to the teachers, of what to look for.
So what are those things? What would you tell them to look for?
Well, for example, if you had a child coming to you who had some medical complications, for example, if they had a heart defect, that's one of the cardinal signs. Approximately, I think 60% or so of the children with this syndrome have a heart defect. They're usually repaired at birth. These children live full lives, but they were born with some type of a heart defect. Then again, this palate abnormality. So you might notice a hypernasal speech. So they kind of sound like they're speaking through their nose, mm-hmm. a little hypernasal to them, or some language impairment. Some of them are low muscle tone, so a little more difficult learning to write or fine motor coordination. And then the cardinal learning piece of this is really the math, very severe math disability, and the reading comprehension disability.
Okay.
But it can be elusive because you may not have the heart defect. You may be of that 40% that don't have a heart defect. You know, so it becomes kind of, you know, difficult to diagnose it. I think raising awareness among the physicians in the country, you know, raising awareness among teachers who are on the front line, really to notice that maybe there is a difference here. When I have parents come to me and say, you know, I have a child, because I do consulting for parents who have other issues besides 22q, but oftentimes when I'm on the phone with them and they're describing their child, it sounds very much like 22q, and I'll say, well, do you have any medical issues that are associated with your child? And if there are some of those cardinal medical issues, the recommendation would be to discuss it with the doctor, because there's a very simple blood test that can be done. It's not a huge, it's not invasive. It's a very simple genetic test that can identify the syndrome. And then that opens up a whole world of research of specific tests to do, specific ways to approach learning, and specific techniques and approaches to, you know, outlook on life, you know, targeting those adaptive skills, reducing the stress, all of those things that you can do that will really make a difference in the child's life long term.
Okay. Yeah. And I think you are in a very unique position because you are a qualified teacher and have, it was a
36 years 36 in the classroom years. And a master's in counseling psychology.
Fantastic.
So I have a very strong educational background, but I also have a child, an adult child of 34 years old with the syndrome, and started going to conferences involved with this in 1994. And at that point, this kind of morphed into a second career for me because I was, you know, so heavily trained through, you know, attending all of these conferences and connecting with the leading researchers globally on the syndrome. So over all these years, you know, I've kind of developed this expertise. And, you know, at this point, I'm so thrilled to be here in Ireland to share what I have learned through my experience and through my working with families. I mean, last year, the foundation had served over 250 families with the syndrome across the United States and Canada, dealing with school issues. And when you read the records and see the testing and work with these families one-on-one for, you know, 250 in a year. So when you think about the amount of experience and, you know, expertise that comes in, that's how this grew with me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, at this point, I'm very excited to be here and, you know, sharing with the families and sharing with the staff here to help the children here.
Very good. And I know you're speaking in Trinity College Dublin tomorrow at a conference, a 22Q conference. Can you tell us a bit about that, Anne, and about your invitation to Donna, and about whether, is this an annual event? Is this open to teachers, you know, going forward? How do teachers find out information about 22Q? Things like that.
Our conferences are open to everyone. Aoife, we're always pleased to see healthcare professionals, teachers, educators, special needs assistants, anyone who has come into contact with a child with 22Q or a family. I suppose we have an annual conference, and from we set up as an organisation in 2007. And I suppose based on my own personal experience, I realised that parents needed accurate information. Because if we don't have accurate information about this condition, we're liable to make many a mistake with our child. And at least with the accurate information, we can then give that to a school or a teacher or a clinician, as it happens sometimes. So that was the reason for having the annual conference. And every year we bring a different expert in the condition. We do have, I've always said, we have tremendous expertise here in this country, but we don't have syndrome specific expertise. And I think when we have, I like the, you know, the IEP, I like that to also stand for an informed, educated parent. because when we have the knowledge, it really benefits our children. I just say one other thing about the invisibility. Because Anya mentions this a lot herself. She says, you know, people can't see this. This is not like Down syndrome where it's instantly visible and recognizable. There are very many children with 22q that it's not apparent. Unless you have a trained clinical eye for the subtle features, you're not going to know this child has a syndrome. You spoke about the giveaways. One of the ones for me has always been the concrete, literal thinking. And I know all children, we're like that at a certain point when we're smaller, but with these children, that tends to stay. Even into teen and adult years, they can still be very concrete and, you know, literal in their thinking.
And I just am conscious that as we've talked, we've mentioned a lot of the challenges and, you know, the concrete thinking and the maths. And I remember Anya previously mentioning recipes and things like that. But I know both of you are also experts. What are the positives and what are the wonderful things that they bring? And certainly from meeting Anya, I've seen that, how entertaining she is, how open she is. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about, I suppose, the wonderful characteristics that you've seen with the children with 22q?
Number one, I think, is these kids want to please. They're wonderful workers. They are hard workers. They're wonderful employees. And many of them do work as adults. So the goal really is integration into the community as a functioning member of society. So I think that's extremely positive. You won't find a kinder, more loving person. I mean, I've met these children all over the world, and they are lovely, lovely kids. So I think in positives is, you know, parents should be encouraged that with the right education and with the right balance between, you know, what they're capable of and what the expectations are, and that I always try to scaffold that support around them, they can flourish as adults. They can be flourishing, productive members of society. You know, the vast majority of them need some level of support and care as adults, I think, to be honest about it. But that level of care can be somewhat hands-off, you know, with some supervision from afar. Others will need a lot more care. It just kind of depends on whether the mental health issues are more severe or whether their global impairment was more severe to start off with. But I think the outlook is promising. There's also research into stem cell, studies that are going on with. So I think there's really reason for families to be optimistic about this. Mm-hmm. My own child with this, who is 34, is married. I have a grandchild. Oh, I have a beautiful little girl who is 4 years old, my little granddaughter, Bria. And my son works. He works part-time. He delivers car parts through an auto dealer. You know, he delivers around the city. He drives, and they live close by. And I'm part of his life on a daily basis. I'll talk to him quite a bit. And he has help with finances and some support financially. But he's an independent person. And, you know, for the most part, I think, you know, moving through adult-like life in a positive way. So, you know, for parents, I think their goal is really a happy adult that feels a part of society and is, you know, pursuing, I'm strongly a supporter of work. I think it gives somebody a purpose to their day and a purpose to life to have some type of employment. So I think that that's a definite outcome that most adults with this syndrome can enjoy.
I think that's great. I think it actually, what you've just, both of you just mentioned actually is, has really reinforced how important that they get the supports early, that early intervention, because that will lead to what you've just described, that maybe a little bit of structure, a little bit of hands off, but still that you can live a potentially independent life. And I know, Anne, you've been fantastic with Anya on that, because, you know, she's has certain structures, but it is leading quite an independent life, has studied, works, you know, is doing things like that.
Yeah, it is. It is so important, Eva. The classic trajectory for 22q is the early years are all about medical. They're all about therapies, medical appointments, hospital appointments, some surgeries, and then you move into the educational, the behavioural and emotional issues, and that's where the structure and the help really, for me, has to come in, because I think when we're trying to mitigate or stave off serious mental health issues, this is the piece that makes the difference. And it helps, as we've all heard Tony Simon say, it helps to keep the child coping rather than struggling. And they don't become 18 and suddenly it all disappears, you know. They still struggle in a different way. We don't have too much research on adults, really. So we're hoping to develop that as we go along.
Brilliant. Also. And I suppose just for anyone who's listening now, who, I suppose, what are the steps that you take if you're in Ireland, if you have suspicions? Like if I am a teacher in a classroom, I'm after listening to this podcast, I have some suspicions about a pupil in my class. What are the steps that I take? What do I do?
That could be a little tricky, because I remember actually when Anya was five or six and went into school, and the teacher, she wasn't there long, the teacher immediately said to me, "I think you should have her assessed." And I said, "Well, for what?" Do you know, so the teacher recognised very quickly that Anya wasn't keeping up with her peers, because at some point you're going to have to suggest a genetic test. So, but if a teacher does suspect, I would say to contact myself and 22Q Ireland, and I will always do my best to help. And at least give some information.
And I know you've mentioned previously about Donna's book. Can you tell us a little bit about your book?
Yes, I have a book. It is called Educating Children with Velocardiofacial Syndrome. Now, velocardiofacial syndrome is another name for the 22q11 deletion syndrome. There's actually three names to this same problem. Okay. 22q11 deletion, velocardiofacial syndrome, and DeGeorge syndrome.
It's great to know, actually.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So my book is Educating Children with Velocardiofacial Syndrome. It's currently in its second edition, but I am writing the third edition. And the third edition will be out next fall.
Great.
So I'm very, very excited about an absolutely up-to-date, you know, research-based book. And what I've tried very, very hard to do is take the research, and the first half of the book goes through all the studies. It's more like a PhD thesis, you know, where you would look through all of the literature. And I have world experts who have so generously volunteered to write chapters for me. Mm-hmm. So the leading experts in, you know, speech and language, leading expert in brain and cognition, leading expert in psychiatry, have written chapters in that first part of the book to define the syndrome and what research has told us in experimental studies, which we can then translate those studies and what we've learned from that into the second half of the book, which is practice. So the second half is designed for teachers and for parents. And it's really divided up according to age levels. It is specific interventions, apps, you know, things to do in the classroom. It's a very, I try to make it very applicable, hands-on. Because I know
I think that's the teacher in you.
As a teacher, well, you know, research is mm-hmm. fine, but, you know, you have a study, but now what do I do with this?
Absolutely.
You know, mm-hmm. How do I take what we've learned from that and actually make a difference for this young child? Mm-hmm. So what I try to do in the 22Q community is to take the research, translate that for parents and teachers so that what's gained is actually useful.
Brilliant.
So important.
I think we're all going to have that on our wish list.
Thank you.
Okay, so just before we finish up, do you have anything else you'd like to tell me about 22Q or maybe any advice that you'd like to pass on to teachers as a parting word? What would you say to anyone listening, not even necessarily just teachers, because we could have, as you said, SNAs, educators, healthcare professionals. Mm-hmm. What would be your parting, if you could summarize it all, what would you like them to know?
Do you know, since in the last 10 years, Aoife, I've come to realize that 22q is just one of several chromosomal conditions that are now, because of new genetic testing, chromosomal array, that there are a lot of, I like to say there's a lot of Anyas mm-hmm. out there, mm-hmm. not particularly with 22q, but with these similar issues. So because it is the most common of these chromosomal conditions after Down syndrome, I think it's a perfect model to look at in terms of neurodevelopmental difficulties in the classroom. And that a lot of the, when you get a lot of the practices right, you gain a far greater understanding of a lot of these problems that children are experiencing. And also that, you know, the child is struggling, all behavior is communication. And if the child is struggling greatly in the classroom, it's an indication that there could be something mm-hmm. else going on.
Very good. And Donna, what do you think?
You know, I think to impart the fact that this is complicated mm-hmm. and there is not really a quick fix for this.
Or a one size fits all.
I mean, I can't say if you do X, Y, and Z, this is going to fix the problem. Mm-hmm. It's very complex. But knowledge is power. And if you come into the classroom with a good understanding of the syndrome and what the research tells us, you at least know what tests to do and where to start. And, you know, over the years, what types of approaches work best with the vast majority of these children. And for example, a small example, but there's a visual spatial deficit that many children with this syndrome have. One piece of that is visual sequential memory. Well, if you're teaching a child how to multiply a 3-digit number by a 2-digit number, and you're showing that to them, and they have a visual sequential memory deficit, they're not going to remember the steps.
Of course.
So knowing the one piece really can change the way you approach the teaching. And I think when we really start to dissect what is going on with the child, and it gives you an informed way to approach learning. And so there's not a lot of wasted time and frustration on both part, because I remember as a teacher, I wanted that child to learn. I just didn't know,
it's our goal.
You know, what approach to use. So I think if we know what tests to do and how the syndrome longitudinally changes over time, which we know with this research, it's important to arm the teachers with the information that they need in order to be more effective.
Brilliant. So. Well, look, thank you to the two of you. I think you're both absolutely incredible with how much you're doing to raise awareness about 22Q.
Thank you.
And I know that for many people, myself included, I feel like I've certainly learned a lot more about it. So thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you, Aoife.